back in elementary school, I had a pen pal. Did you guys ever do that? I don't remember who my pen pal was, but I remember doing it. I remember, you know, getting out my pencil and paper and writing some kind of letter, some kind of note to this person I had never met. And I think I don't know that I had only one pen pal. There may have been one. Maybe his name was Daryl. Spelled differently, but I think it might have been. I didn't remember this when I was preparing this, but I think it was. And I remember in elementary, like early elementary school, I was writing these pen pal letters back and forth. And, you know, when we think about a letter, there's a structure to it, yes? Dear whatever your name is, and then you go on and, you know, some kind of introduction, and then you go into what you have to say. And as a first or second grader, I didn't have a whole lot to say. But maybe I did. I just didn't want to write it all. And then you have, you know, a salutation, like, you know, sincerely or whatever, and you sign your name, right? That's kind of the basic form of a letter. Well, epistles, or the letters in the New Testament, have a basic structure to them as well. And I think it's good to know what those are. It would have been helpful if I would have put slides together, but I did not and ran out of time. So let me just kind of give you this idea. Now, each letter in the New Testament doesn't exactly follow this, like, quote-unquote, but you can see the theme when you start reading books, letters in the New Testament. So first, you got the name of the writer, you know, I, Paul, so an apostle of Christ Jesus, all this. Name of the recipient, to the churches in Galatia. And then they have a greeting, which, as we looked at a while ago, Galatians didn't have much of a greeting. He just kind of called them some names. And didn't have a prayer wish or thanksgiving much either. He was a little upset. But in the other ones, you can see like I've been praying for you, and I thank God for you, and I, you know, all that kind of stuff. Then the body, which is the biggest part, and then the final greeting and farewell. And then there's also like some types of epistles, types of different ones. And I think it's interesting to know this because it kind of just helps when we categorize these. It helps with our context of when we're starting to read them. So first of all, we have the Pauline epistles, which you can kind of gauge that's Paul, epistles of Paul. Now there's other categories I could have given you, like Johannine, I believe is how we say it, Johannine, which are the epistles of John, first, second, third. But the Pauline epistles include these ones, and if you want to write these down, you can. If not, you may know these: Romans, first and second Corinthians, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, 1 and 2 Thessalonians, 1 and 2 Timothy, Titus, and Philemon. Beyond that, we have the general epistles, which, just broadly speaking, are Hebrews, James, 1 and 2 Peter, 1, 2, 3 John, and Jude. Then we have some like categorical ones as like a sub, if we were going to make an outline. These be like sub headings from epistles. So Paul had many different situations he was writing in. And some of them are prison epistles. So these are ones that he wrote while he was imprisoned. And it kind of gives some, at least knowing the background, at least in my mind, of some of these letters that he wrote, give us an idea of what his situation was. So when we see him talking about joy in Philippians, when we know that he's imprisoned, it kind of catches us in a reflection, at least for me, that wow, he's facing this circumstance, and yet his call to action for them is to have joy, and I think that's pretty powerful. So the prison ones, so these are ones that Paul wrote while in prison, as far as we know: Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, and Philemon. Those are ones that he wrote while in prison. And then there are some pastoral epistles where he wrote to an individual. Now, as far as we know, these ones were written to this person, and I mean, whether they were circulated right away or whatever, obviously we found them and we know that they exist. So more than just these people read them. But 1 and 2 Timothy, those were, you know, written to Timothy, and Titus are also pastoral epistles. So anyone who is going into like church leadership or wants to be a good leader. Those are good ones to go to because that's Paul's kind of motivation in writing them, among other things. So I want to give you guys some hacks or keys to reading these well, and then we're going to jump into one of them together, and then we'll jump into one at your table. So number one, this is one thing that has, especially in the letters, has stuck out to me so much, and we alluded to it last week as well as I think in the Gospels, but follow the author's flow. Don't cut him off when we're reading the letters. Follow the author's flow. Don't cut him off because, like we talked about last week, chapters and headings and all those things were added later. So when we strictly focus on those things when we're reading, we oftentimes cut them off in mid-thought, which to me, I don't think is helpful. So the handout will be, I don't have anything for this stuff. Yeah, sorry. probably would have been helpful if I would have wrote that down.
I did.
So even if you don't do this each time, even if you, it's not a bad thing, right, if we just read a chapter of the Bible, but I think we have to be conscious of what we're doing when we only do that in a letter. So follow the author's flow. Don't cut him off. If you see him going on, like, if you're going to stop at the end of a chapter, at least check out what he starts saying at the next chapter so that you can kind of have an idea of where this is going. But again, the best thing you can do, and I will just keep saying this, if you want to understand a book of the Bible, especially the epistles, because they're shorter, and you can do this and it doesn't take you hours on end, read them in one sitting. Number two, leave your theological presuppositions at the door. now, this is hard, right? I've been growing in my awareness of my own theological starting points and conclusions when I'm reading this, because I oftentimes find myself reading something that says, Brandon, you're wrong about something. Or maybe you have looked at something as an absolute thing, and maybe it's more like this thing that we just looked at with Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. Maybe there's some balance to something that I've been thinking. Maybe this is just, this is how it is. So no matter if you grew up in church or not, you have a theology, because we all do. We all have some kind of way we look at the world, a worldview. And I would just call that a theology. If you didn't grow up in church, you still grew up inside a worldview. Your parents had beliefs that they taught you. They did, certainly. Whether they meant to or not. We all have a theology, whether it is biblical or not. And that right there, biblical theology, even is hard to define. Because go ahead and investigate one theological doctrine. And read an assortment of, pick 10 authors. You'll find 10 different nuanced approaches to that different doctrine. So biblical theology, it may be hard to define, but maybe the hardest thing to do is this one, to leave our theological conclusions, the things that we've already believed, and oftentimes believe without even questioning or even investigating. It's hard to leave those at the door. So here's an example of how this plays out, at least how it's been playing out in my world, okay? Are you familiar with the term Arminian? Basically, a belief in the free will of man. I cannot go into like the nuances of Arminian theology right here. We don't have time. There's books about it. As well as Calvinism. Are you familiar with Calvinism? Okay. Depending on where you grew up, what tradition you grew up in, your nose may wrinkle at one of them. Or at both of them. Because there's other options too. But here's the thing. You may want to write these down if you want to, and just see what you think. Romans, when an Arminian is reading these passages, they may be tempted to read around them. Romans 8:30, Romans 9:18-24, Galatians 1:15, and Ephesians 1:4-5. Now, when a Calvinist reads these passages, they may be tempted to read around them or to create some kind of secret will of God to justify their position. like this. 1 Corinthians 10, 1 through 13. 2 Peter 2, 20 to 22. Hebrews 6, 4 through 6. So we all do this. We all have a hard time with leaving those conclusions at the door when we start reading the epistles because we carry it with us. But we have to be aware that they are there. And I've been really pressing myself to embrace the tension, embrace the discomfort that comes when I read something that doesn't push what I already believe. In fact, it pushes against that. So I would just encourage you to embrace the tension, embrace the discomfort that may come, and maybe the system of theology that you have adopted, maybe it's incomplete. I would say it is. So the only remedy for this is to leave those theological convictions at the door as best as we can.
What? Are you saying we don't understand God completely?
indeed. Number three, try to hear both sides of the conversation when we're reading the letter. Just like when we have a pen pal or read a letter to someone else, from someone else, let's imagine this. Let's imagine you're a kid and you are listening to your father or your mother talk on the phone, and you're curious because of what they're saying, you're curious of what the other side is saying, right? And you can kind of piece together some of the things that is being said or asked on the other side if you're just paying attention really well to what your parent is saying, but it's going to be incomplete, right? Well, that's kind of how we have our situation when we're reading the epistles, like especially in 1 Corinthians. Like we can see that he's addressing some questions that they have, starting, I believe, in chapter 7. He's been talking about all these different things in 1 Corinthians 1 through 6 and things that he wants to get across. And then he goes, okay, now I will answer the questions you guys have for me. So there's a back and forth communication between the two. So the fact that he says that and he's addressing questions that they had, we can really see the other side of the conversation. But we must be aware that there are two parties. Even though one party may be a group of people, there's a conversation going on when we read the epistles. So it's good practice to begin asking yourself as you read the text, what was going on in this church community, if it is to a church community, or what was going on in the life of Timothy or Titus, and you know what was happening, what conversations were going on. You know, in Galatia, there's a situation that Paul is addressing of theological importance for them to stay true to the fact that Jesus is Lord, and they don't need to go back to the Jewish law. So there's definite things that we can gain just by reading it, and that can give us insight into the other side of the conversation. Number four, consider their culture. We have to just keep reminding ourselves whenever we are reading the Bible that these texts were originally written to people who were not in our culture, much different culture in the past than what we are in now today. And so think of culture and the implications of it for your Bible reading as an onion. If you have no understanding of what the culture is, like, you can still see the onion, right? But there may be helpful, it may be helpful to peel back a layer, and you might be able to have something, some little detail revealed to you, a little nugget, if you will, related to, like, some problem passages for us when we're talking about, like, church and, like, back in the 60s, men started growing their hair long, right? The Jesus culture, I think is what it was called. I wasn't around back then, but I read it in a book. and I've seen pictures, of course. In the church, that was a very big deal for people, for men growing their hair long because of something that is said in one of the epistles. It's like shameful to grow your hair long. But it's funny, though. The church never said anything about women covering their heads in worship. And really like that, so we pick and choose. We always do this, but we must, if we're going to pick and choose, we must have a reason to. And if we understand the culture, it will give us insight in what applies to us today. And why they would have said something like, wearing your hair long is, you know, whatever. Or make sure you wear a headdress and all these different things. So consider the culture. And if you don't have like, a Greek history or Jewish history books or something, or if you don't really want to read those, a good study Bible will give you some insight into that stuff. Number five, read problem passages with care and consult a commentary if need be. There are going to be things, most things I would say in the epistles are pretty straightforward. Like we can use common sense and kind of decide, okay, this is probably how this applies to me, or this probably doesn't apply to me. We may be wrong. We surely will be. But there are some things that are problematic, and I just kind of referred to one of those, and to kind of figure out, okay, how does this really apply? Does it apply to us today? I would say also, if you're looking for an online free resource, BibleHub.com is good. It's got a lot of free commentaries on there. I use it a lot. And you can also look into the Greek and the Hebrew and all the different stuff with that. BibleHub.com. It's really good.